This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention.
Hello, everyone. This is Paul Bertarelli reporting from Aero Friedrichshafen in Germany. I'm with Mike Kraft, general manager of Lycoming, who's just given a presentation on fuels, which you've done a lot of lately, Michael. You're a real expert in the area. A couple things I wanted to ask about. You talked about the distribution of UL91, which is an unleaded 91-octane fuel. It's being distributed in Europe, although not widely yet. And you see that as a possible template for fuel distribution in the U.S. as far as specs, as far as distribution and lubrication and so forth. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, what's happened, and it's a fantastic event, in the last year, is there was an ASTM standard for an unleaded 91 motor octane grade aviation fuel. One of the fuel producers, mainly Air Total, decided to produce it and place it at airstrips. And to some extent, it's a more well-controlled grade than the autogas that they were dealing with. What that has set in motion is a series of events from the production of the fuel, the distribution of it, to EASA's SIB, which allowed it to be approved for use on the aircraft without an STC, to labeling the fuel, to being able to take a look at in a meaningful way long-term changes that we would make to the lubricant. So it's actually testing every one of the pieces that we would need to engage for a fleet migration of the 100LL. It's not a replacement for 100LL, but it is a fantastic mechanism to support the 100LL transition. You're right, it's not widely spread, but it seems to be increasingly moving forward. And what I can see from the perspective is that it provides a much more stable source than the autogas-approved engines. There's a wide variety of Lycoming engines that are going to run out as well, and we approve those.
Now, it's worth noting that that is an ASTM-approved fuel, UL91, and could be made by any refinery according to those standards.
That's correct. It is a ASTM production specification, which means this is a commodity-type aviation fuel that could be produced by any refinery, distributed out via any place and put into any FBO under the ASTM qualification. That is very significant. That means that you have something that is able to serve a fleet right now via that standard specification. So it's not a local kind of geographic solution. It's got real teeth in terms of being able to be a worldwide distribution standard.
Now, the next question I know is going to cause you to grimace. It relates to the FAA ART Committee on Unleaded Fuel, an unleaded fuel replacement for avgas. Where are we? Why haven't we heard a report yet?
The FAA Committee, which I was a member of, we wrote up our recommendations. We put them into a very lengthy report if you'd like to have some bedtime reading, about, I think it's close to 300 pages. And we did submit those into the FAA. They are continuing to be under review. I think it's been relayed to us that these recommendations are being reviewed at actually the DOT level, which I view as being quite promising, that it's not going into some lower level drawer, that's actually being very meaningfully examined. In the FAA reauthorization bill, Congress actually explicitly put language in to the FAA reauthorization bill mandating that the FAA take a look at the unleaded avgas transition. The ARC's work satisfies part of, or should satisfy part of, that examination. So I view, yes, there's been a delay in the release of the report, but I view it being extremely positive that it's being taken seriously at very high levels within the U.S. government, at the DOT level, that Congress has actually included language which mandates the FAA to do something. The just received word 2 days ago that the appropriation funding the FAA Tech Center was approved, so the FAA Tech Center funding has, you know, a nominal level, but it continues to have its approval on there. So it's delayed in getting out for maybe what the general population would like to see, but I think it's extremely positive that it's being treated very seriously at many levels. And we're starting to, you know, the snowball is starting to turn down the hill, whether it's UL91 and actual production and distribution under the EU, or the seriousness which the FAA ARCS report is being taken care of. There's some momentum here that has never been in the industry before. And I think that's a big positive. Is it going to happen overnight that we'll have a solution there? No. This is a lot of hard work, but once this ball gets moving, it's going to go to completion.
What are the highlights of the report?
The report is you can liken it to a project plan. The report outlines every one of these interface points that you need to address to actually select a fuel, get the fuel approved, you know, from the standpoint of the research side to the standpoint of actually deployment at large-scale levels. What it does effectively is it gives anybody who is planning to bring a fuel to market a risk management plan. And from my observation, what we've seen a lot in terms of not having solutions on the field is that people weren't willing to take the chance without a defined plan to see it come to market. Nobody's willing to make the investment if they can't see the return. The ARCS report gives a structure for how you see that return on investment.
Will this, do you think, be a mechanism to attract capital?
Absolutely. Is once you give a company the means to show somebody to the venture capitalists or who are people who fund this that they have a means to market, that'll be a great aid to people who can bring legitimate items to market.
And who's going to develop the so-called gated standard for the fuel? Traditionally, companies have brought their products to the ASTM for ASTM approval, but here, is it supposed to work the other way?
In terms of a gated approval for moving forward, I guess the first item is many companies have their own kind of gated mechanisms for approval. You have within the FAA certification process and all the other certifications that need to happen, because we're talking about even fire handling protections. You have all those processes out there. So I might not have understood your question correctly, but the ARC report and the project plan identifies each one of these interface reports. It's not a proposal that there should be exactly this kind of gate to go do this. We want to maintain the flexibility that the folks who are innovating and developing the fuel can bring that along to their procedure, but know in the context of what exactly it takes to get it across the line. There is no one single company or person that can accomplish this. It's going to be a series of events and handoffs, and I think my opinion is the ARC report does a very good job of defining those interfaces from the engine, the aircraft side, the fuel producer side, production distribution. It's rather boring but rather comprehensive in terms of a project plan, and you need that.
You know as much about fuel as anybody in the industry at this point, and especially an engine manufacturer. Do you foresee that once this standard is out there and it has percolated through the FAA and has been finalized, that one of these candidate fuels is going to be the sole fuel, or is there going to be competition among several fuels there that meet the same standard?
That's an interesting question. If you take a look at what's going on now with the alternate jet fuel, you actually have different jet fuel formulations that are able to, from different type of source materials, arrive at the same specification. So I think it's highly likely that you're going to see multiple unleaded type formulations that may achieve to the same unleaded fuel standard, or you may see multiple unleaded standards. The important thing is that it's going to be transparent to the end user. So you could have, say, two ASTM standards or whatever standards are going to be developed on out there in the marketplace, but provided they're transparent to the end user, I think that's the real accomplishment that we need to focus on.
From your point of view and your knowledge of fuels, what does that do to the competitive nature of the fuel provision and also the distribution? Is it a doable thing to have multiple fuels that meet the same performance requirement?
It's doable, and it comes back down to, are you going to try to make them miscible and fungible with existing fuel streams? So they have to be able to coexist. So as long as the fuels are able to be mixed and don't have adverse effects when they're mixed, you're going to be able to maintain multiple kind of fuel streams going forward. You know, once again, there's a lot of hard work to be done in this. It's not an impossible problem, but we have a structure now for that hard work to get done.
What's your crystal ball on the economics?
I think that a structure which has competition involved inside of it is very likely that between a combination of minor changes on the engines and aircraft equipment and some good movement by the people who are innovating producing the fuels, that we should be able to come out with something that's about at the same level as $100 in terms of the end consumer. Competition is a good thing. And the more people who are involved in the process, the better it's going to be for the consumer at the end of the day.
Michael, thanks for the update.
Okay, thank you.
This is Paul Bertarelli reporting from Aero Friedrichshafen in Friedrichshafen, Germany. You've been listening to AvWeb's continuing coverage of the show. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention.